Catherine, I honestly think that science in general, since the Enlightenment, so we're talking 18th century or at best the early 19th century, I think science in general has been on the wrong track. If you look at biology, we've had Darwin, and I'm not a Darwinist. I'll just be right up front.
No, I'm not that. Either. I don't think it makes any sense.
I'm in the same boat.
Right.
You look at physics, which is kind of my hobby, and ever since James Clerk Maxwell, it's been increasingly bizarre. We've got quantum mechanics, standard model, and then Albert Einstein, with his black holes and gravitational tensors and all of this nonsense. There are areas of physics that I think are on the right track, but they are not part of the mainstream in most people's thinking.
Right.
There are areas of biology that I think are on the right, Dr. Sheldrake, for example, that are not part of mainstream biology that I think are on the right track as well. But, and I think there are areas of physics that unite the two rather nicely. But by and large, the narrative that we've been sold in terms of science is just all garbled nonsense. Just look at the planned scamdemic.
So I'm a great fan of Ingo Swann.
Yes.
And I've read some of his books, but not all of them. And I hadn't realized, I found out when we did a retreat, Elsa von Hamelin let me know this. Nick Cook, who is the British journalist who wrote The Hunt for Zero Point.
Zero Point, yes. Mm-hmm.
Was a friend of Swann's. And
oh,
after
really?
Swann died, yeah, he was a friend of Swann's, and knew Swann, admired him greatly, said that Swann was just an amazing polymath, like Da Vinci. Mm-hmm. And in fact, some people used to call him the Da Vinci of the 20th century. Anyway, so his Swann's sister and niece invited him to basically help them package and publish two of Swann's manuscripts that had never been published. He left a lot of manuscripts that were still raw. Mm-hmm. And so Cook worked to publish this, and he took these two books, published it in one book, and I'm about halfway through, and it's called The Resurrection of the Mysterious.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and what he's trying to do is he's trying to create a framework to understand that which is invisible.
Uh-huh.
So the aspects of our life, the spiritual and energetic aspects, uh-huh. including our intelligence that is invisible to the naked eye, uh-huh. he's trying to create a framework for it. And one of the things he makes a very important case, and he clearly believes it's very important that we understand that all the different areas of our world, whether material or religious, were adamant that they wanted to shut us off from that aspect of our powers.
Oh, absolutely.
And he really documents about how, every lane and every side is to trying to shut off
uh-huh.
our amazing powers.
Uh-huh.
And he's right. And yeah. I began to realize as I was reading through it, all the different places where every time you try and go there in all these different lanes, they just, it's attack, attack, attack
uh-huh.
to stop it. And
yeah, they don't want the high octane speculation. They don't want people thinking in terms like you and I think in these in
or
these
integrating.
Rapid.
They don't want them
or
integrating.
They don't want any of that. No, they don't want any of that. And I really think it's a kind of epistemological warfare. They don't want humans to imagine at all, because the moment you start imagining things is the moment you start creating and start thinking for yourself.
Well, that's why I love Rappaport's work on imagination, because he's just got that.
Yeah.
He spent years trying to figure out what was really going on under the carpet. And then he came back and said, imagination, that's our breakout point.
Imagination is the key here. And this is the other part of owning the culture. Ideas are ultimately the root of all capital.
Yeah. Well, life is the source of all capital.
Capital.
Life.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And imagination is at the root.
Imagination, yes.
Yeah, is at the root. I couldn't agree more.